Okay, first of all, let me thank the organizers for kind invitation and also for the conference and also for the program. And I'm going to be here around that for five extra weeks, so I'm happy to discuss more. Well, today I'm going to talk about something, which I hope to understand to some extent, because there are so many experts here on this resurgence, and a lot of them advertise too much of what I did. But I hope to give you some thought of at least one possible strategy of how to approach the problem in connection with what I have been thinking about recently. So the question I'm going to discuss is the issue of Stokes graphs. As in the title, I hope people can in the back can see. And the Stokes graph, so it's some graph, combinatorial object, but defined very geometrically. And this arises in the study of exact WKB analysis. And of course, there has been a lot of works, especially the work by Andre Boros. This is about originally in the context of the Schrödinger equation. So it's some equation, and then there is some polynomial, say potential. Let me call it P for potential, and y equal to 0, psi equal to 0. And so this is the second order differential equation. And this is a classic an exact WKB analysis. And you can try to solve it. There is h bar here. And you can try to solve it order by order, starting with perturbation theory. And 1 over h bar, I think there is a square root px. And then there's an order variable order expansion. And the question is whether you can resum it to a well-defined function via Borel sum. Now, what I'm going to talk about in this context refers to the generalization of this, where we have nth order differential equation. So p to n, so there is a h bar to the n, if you like. And then there are some functions, so lower order terms. And n minus 1 derivative, n minus 2 derivative, et cetera. And then there can be functions multiplying that. So for example, let me write just one term. For example, p1 and dn minus 1, dx n minus 1. And then this p1 is a function. And all the way to the constant term equal to 0. So this is some differential equation. And people certainly have talked about this type of differential equations and what happens to resurgence already in the 80s. Well, except that in my opinion, there are still a lot of things to be done about this particular case. And in fact, the Stokes graph for this case is very complicated. I'm going to give you a definition of Stokes graph momentarily, but it's a complete something defined very concretely. So nowadays, we have computers, so you can plot it. But then it's extremely complicated, even for simple potentials. So you want to understand it better somewhat. That's in a slightly different way from the conventional approach. Now, what makes the story interesting is that this same thing is actually the same thing with the different name. People in these days also refer to this as spectral networks. So this is the same graph, again, a graph. Well, to be fair, this might contain a little bit more information, et cetera, but it's basically the same thing, spectral network. And they are studied in the context of four-dimensional n equal 2 series. So BPS states in for the n equal 2 gauge series. So-called cross S. Cross S in practice means that it's associated with some Riemann surface, plus some singularities. And the Riemann surface in this case is just that the y squared plus px equal to 0. And if you quantize it, then it becomes this. So this is a phase space, and there is a one-form, Liouville form, like y dx, which plays the role of the Seibel-Witten differential in this context. Now, so the Stokes graph and the spectral networks are essentially the same object. But now, in this context, there is a motivation to go to this higher-order differential equation. Partly because, so let me call this A1 case, and let's call this AN case. And in the AN case, that's the case where the cross theory of AN. And that's the case comes from the wrapping NM fibre ends on this Riemann surface, which is considered to be non-Lagrangian 4D theory, for example. So studying the BPS states of these things has an extra motivation. And indeed, this is a Riemann surface plus a lot of singularities. And there are various different types and singularities, and then see what we are going to obtain as far as the BPS states are concerned. Singularities. And there are various different types of singularities. What people in the subclasses literature call refers to, first of all, so-called regular punctures. And their puncture called the maximal and non-maximal, whose meaning I'm going to hopefully explain. And it turns out that for the maximum puncture, there's a, at least to some extent, Godefroy story. But for the non-maximal punctures, there is a very little known result. And the punctures in this context refers to the fact that some of these functions, there are some polynomial, like a function, not necessarily polynomial, some functions in these coefficients, and they might have poles and various interesting poles. So that's the type of the questions we are interested in, either in this context or that context. Although, well, the type of the question people ask are not exactly the same, but you might expect that if you learn something from here, then you can transfer it to there, or the other way around. And the connection is certainly known, but especially in the more general puncture singularities, it's never been worked out. Now, well, as I said, if you try to plot the spectral network or Stokes graph, it's extremely complicated. And well, before start working on this, I saw that, well, okay, it's a simple graph, so it's a defined, well-defined thing. So why don't you just plot it and try to read it off? But even the cases where I think I know the theory is very simple, the Stokes graph is actually extremely complicated, and I didn't know how to proceed. It was certainly beyond my comprehension to some extent. Well, locally there are some structures, but the global structure of the graph is highly complicated. And if I have time, I can show you some examples in the slides. And it happens that there is a little bit different way of looking at this side of the problem, and that uses the approach of the so-called quivers. And I have been interested in this approach ever since. In fact, I have a PhD thesis about doing the counting BPS states on quivers, for example. So a quiver is just an oriented graph, a single graph. Well, as a spectral network, it's a graph depending on some parameter theta, which I'm going to introduce later. So it's a one-parameter family of graphs. And it's very complicated, but the quiver is much simpler, even for the very complicated ones. And in what people say in n equal to BPS states, the people studying this say, is that in many cases, you can just draw a very simple quiver, and then it contains a lot of information. In fact, you can recover almost everything about this BPS states. Just starting with that. Do not necessarily have to start with all this. Well, except that that story has been well worked out but for the A1 case, but not necessarily for more general AN cases. So what I have been recently doing, though that's the concerns of title BPS graph, that's in a collaboration with my excellent collaborators, Maximo Gabera and Pietro Longhi and Chan-Yun Park. So we introduced the concept of BPS graph and to give a bridge between spectral network and the BPS quivers. Oh, well, I should say that the subset of these people are on the job market this year. So once you have this quiver, then you have a hope that you can try to discuss this Stokes graph in terms of this quiver. So that's the strategy. And whether this works or not, I don't really know. But I should add that for the A1 case, a lot of things are well understood. And indeed, this does work for the A1. And that's more or less implicit in the concept of solvimates and also the spectral network. This is discussed by GMN. Many of the details are spelled out in the paper by Iwaki and Apanishi. So quivers, and also there's an algebra called a crust algebra associated with it. And that describes very well with what happens with the WKB analysis. So in the rest of the time, I'm going to, let's see. So that is the type of the things we want to discuss. And maybe if you're an expert, you might already have an idea what I mean to say. Well, if it's not clear, I'm going to give a little bit more explanation. Well, I hope people can see. If you can't see, please let me know. So let's see. So let's discuss the quiver in the simple possible case, simplest possible case. It's always best to start with the simplest possible case. And let's do this case, A1 case first. So it's an old-fashioned Schrödinger equation. But say the Px, the potential, is a polynomial Px. And let's say the Px is cubic polynomial. And then what is the Stokes graph? Well, the Stokes graph is defined by vertices and edges. And vertices are the zeros of this polynomial. So in this case, if it's cubic, there are three zeros. And that's the point where this curve sort of degenerates. So you can think of this as a double fold cover, so y squared. So you can solve for y. And there is a plus minus square root. And there is a two branches. So it's a double cover. This curve is a double cover of the, in this case, plane parameterized by this x. So it's a double cover. But when px equals to 0, the two covers collide. So it's a branch point. So the branch points are the vertices, which in this case, there are three. And then from each branch point, you're going to draw a line defined by the equation that imaginary part of this px, dx, stays constant, and then, well, in this case, 0, for example, along the path, starting with one of these branch points. And then that's a local analysis. And you can convince yourself that there are three lines emanating and draw a picture. And if you plot it, it looks like something like this, for example. And it might be something like this, for example. Well, why is people in exact WKB analysis interested in this? Because it defines a region where this Borel sum of this function is smooth. So that's an interesting result, which I think is hard to prove completely rigorously. But the statement is that this function after Borel summation has a smooth function inside each of these regions surrounded by this thing, and each of these regions is called the Stokes region, and this graph curve is called the Stokes graph. And of course, the meaning of the line is that when it crosses this line, something might happen. So the functions defined by the Borel summation might jump. And the so-called WKB connection formula tells you how the jump happens. Well, in this case, there are two solutions. Well, I said that I took up one branch, but there are two branches here, plus minus. So there are actually two solutions. And when you cross the lines, one of the solutions becomes the linear combination of the other two, et cetera. So that's the reason. And for that reason, people are interested in this Stokes graph. And also, well, so when you do define the Borel summation, well, you first define, well, we had, well, you need to integrate in the Borel plane. But you can also, well, typically you can try to do that on the real axis. But you can also integrate in the direction loaded by angle theta. So it's a directional Borel transform, I think it's called. And if you do that, there is going to be a factor, exponential minus I theta, where theta corresponds to that parameter. So theta runs from 0 to 2 pi. So if you want to understand the whole structure in the complex plane, you've got to vary this parameter theta from 0 to 2 pi, and then scan these parameters. And what happens is that if you rotate this parameter theta, this thing, so these three lines here, begins to rotate here and there, for example. And it begins to rotate. And then there are three lines, but these three lines rotated somewhat, not completely independently, because there is only one parameter. So something interesting happens once each of these things rotate. In particular, the Stokes graph can jump. There is a discontinuity in the topology of the Stokes graph sometimes. Well, when? Well, when one of these lines, the edges of the Stokes graph, it grows, and then it might hit another branch point. So that's the very special case. And so that happens at some special value, theta equals theta c. And before and after, the structure is very different. So it's either this or, for example, this, something like this, locally. So this is before and after if you try to change the parameter theta gradually. But something very special happens here. And there is this line. So this is the, and this line is called a Stokes segment, or people in n equal 2 theory call it a K-wolf. And people in n equal 2 theory are interested because they are supposed to represent the BPS state. The reason is that, so this is a branch point. So starting from this branch point, if you try to go to the direction of the cover, there are two lines. It's a double fold cover. So there is two lines emanating from that. And then it ends from here. So if you go to the double cover, there is a sort of a cycle. That's supposed to be a picture if you go to the cover, but I might actually write it more like this or something. But anyway, if you go to the cover, maybe that's not the previous model. Okay, but you can throw to there is a circle, and in fact, I forgot to say that there is actually a branch point in this branch cut. Emanating this branch point. So which defines a general Riemann surface, and this is a cycle going around. So it starts on one seat, and then goes back to another seat. Now, what is the quiver in this case? Well, the quiver in this case is actually extremely simple. That's why I chose this example. So if once you begin to rotate, et cetera, there's going to be one of these Stokes segments here. So let me call it gamma 1, for example. And then there's going to be another Stokes segment. Actually, that depends on some parameters, depending on the coefficients, et cetera. But in some cases, they're only these two things, gamma and gamma 2. So there's going to be a Stokes segment once you begin to rotate. The point is that, these two things, in general, if you consider generic parameter, will not appear simultaneously for different values of theta. So once you change the parameter theta, this happens at certain values, and this happens at certain values of theta. But not simultaneously. But nevertheless, there are two such things. And you can count the intersection number of the cycles surrounding this, and the which keeps 1 or minus 1, depending on the convention. So the quiver in this case is simply that, this gamma 1. And this color is difficult to see from behind. So let's use this color, which is probably easier to see, gamma 1 and gamma 2. And there's a single arrow in between. So this is the A1 quiver. And this A1 quiver is the quiver for this cubic polynomial with the second order differential equation. Well, so this is a dramatic simplification from the picture I'm writing. It's just a very simple graph, only two nodes and one edge. Well, of course, in this case, it's not that complicated, but it's a much simpler graph. And the point is that people realize that this one actually knows quite a little bit about the original problem. Well, what does it know? Well, at least it knows about the foreign. It knows about the monodromy of these functions. So what is the meaning of this? So so let's define phi, psi plus minus. So psi plus minus, these are the formal solutions, and you can try to borrow some. So they are, as I said, they are plus minus, they are two solutions. Now, so this is defined by integral over some path. So you can take a fixed sum point, and then at value x, you can define it as an integral from some difference point, say x0 to x, along some path. And for that, you need to specify a certain path. That defines a function. Defined at the point x. But then the interesting thing is that something interesting might happen if that x moves around the branch points. So if x goes around and goes around this, there are many possible choices. And then in general, the function will not come back to itself. And there is a difference. And but that difference can be expressed in terms of the so-called Borel symbols, which takes the form of, there is a factor 2, et cetera, but then px dx along the path gamma I. So let's call it V for Borel, I guess. So this is the So this gamma I is the plus gamma I. So these are, this is the closed integral. So whatever difference there is, that just related to the choice of ambiguity of the path, well, the monotony of the path, and whatever difference comes from the closed path surrounding these things. In fact, essentially the same, the fact that was explained in the old paper by Boros, I think. Now, so this gamma I, so these gamma I's are, so this thing is present for each vertex of the quiver. And then there is this transformation point. Well, so this is for a specific choice of the parameter. But once you have this crossing, et cetera, happens, this monodromy, this Boros symbol, will jump. And that's the formula due to Delabate Dillinger Pham. And jump, suppose that there is a particular gamma. So let's call it a gamma, say, gamma k. Becomes the segment, Stokes segment. And then discuss what happens to gamma I, so for the general I. Right, so this is the index I. And then the formula says that this thing, so, well, okay, so you have to borrow some, and you have to borrow some, and then before and after. So let's call it plus and minus. And before and after, so they are related by the following transformation, Borel transformation, and then 1 plus gamma k, okay, so maybe before and after, so this is, okay, this is supposed to be plus and minus. Well, maybe I'm going to use the notation, the b minus, to make, that's probably easier to understand. So this is the Borel transformation before and after. And then there is a power which goes like the inner product between this gamma I, gamma k. So this is due to Delabate Dillinger Pham, although many of the ingredients are already in the Boros papers to the extent I can understand. So this is a very interesting formula. And, let's see, Now, what's interesting, what's interesting is that this formula, exactly the same formula, was something people in quiver and the so-called cluster algebra associates was interested in. So namely, for completely different reason, people say that there is something called a Q, quiver. Okay, what is a quiver? It's just defined by antisymmetric matrix. So let's call this, in this case, Qij is defined from this intersection matrix, but people are interested in more general antisymmetric matrix. And then, for each vertex, so maybe for each entry here, you associate some variable here, such that transformation property are exactly this. So this is the cluster algebra. More technically, it's some of the automorphism associated with the cluster mutation of the cluster Y variable. But the same formula appears already in the quiver. So that means that, in this case, so that was a complicated graph, but at least as far as this thing, so namely the important jump of this Boros symbol or monodromy data is concerned, as far as that is concerned, things are encoded nicely in the abstract formalism of quiver and then the set of variables associated with that. So that was the A1 case. Let's see. Now, you have to discuss what happens to the AN cases. And the question is that can we extract a quiver, first of all? And in some cases, luckily, there is a known quiver, so you can just use the literature. The side comment is that these quivers are derived because people are interested in the moduli space of flat connection, which appears in this 4D n equal 2 series language. But in general, not. So what is the setup of the AN case? Well, in the AN case, I have the curve. So let me call the curve. I'm going to have the curve. And in this, the curve is going to be given by this thing, so it's n by n minus phi x equal to 0. So this is the spectrocarbon Hitchin moduli, if you like. But anyway, so this phi takes values and say SLN, for example. SLN matrix. And then this defines a cover, n-fold cover, of surface C, whose local coordinate is given by x. And this has, in general, many singularities, allows for singularities. And whenever you have singularities, it allows for the singularities for this field, phi. And, well, since this is SLN n valued, well, locally, the singularity structure takes the form of the matrix, n by n matrix. And at the singular point, x equals to x0, for example, then there can be residue. Well, you can go to higher order poles. That's called the irregular singularity. But let's consider the simpler case where there's a regular singularity, so-called. So there is just a single order pole. But even in that case, there is a n by n matrix. And you have to specify the singularity type. And also, well, this is supposed, the conjugation doesn't matter because by element of SUN doesn't matter, because this is defined by this determinant equation. So the condition is that this matrix conjugates to a certain element. And that certain element can be taken to be the Jordan-Brock form. And when all the eigenvalues are different, that's called a 1-1-1-1 puncture. So that's the maximal puncture. So this 1 means the size of this Jordan block. So everything is all the eigenvalues are different. In that case, it's called a maximal puncture. It's a generic case. But there are other cases where you have a more complicated Jordan block. And you might think that the more complicated Jordan blocks might be the limit of this thing, but because of this conjugation, you have to be a little bit careful, and it's not simply the limit. So in this setup, what happens is that, say, C can be a sphere, and then there can be multiple singularities, which are specified by these types. And then ask the question of what kind of, well, first of all, then you can ask the question of what kind of phi is allowed. And once phi is allowed, it might have several different parameters. But anyway, once phi is allowed, you can expand this. And it's a determinant, so it gives like to the nth order equation for y. And that's the counterpart of the AN case, or nth order differential equation version of the WKB. And, well, let's see, why is the spectral network in this case complicated? Well, partly because there are many branch points, etc. But one of the reasons is that if you have the two lines cross, well, first of all, when you discuss the lines, etc., well, this is the n-fold cover. So if you solve this, so this is the n-fold equation, so it has n solutions. So y1 to yn, if you solve this for y. And when the branch cut, i's branch cut and j's branch cut might coincide. And for each pair of I and j. Previously, there were only two branch cuts, so only y1 and y2 collide anyway. But in this case, there are more general branch cuts, branch points. And then in the general branch point, maybe should be labeled by two set of integers, ij, for example, 2, 3, or 3, 4, etc. And not only that, but the complication in this case, which is essentially already known in the apparent in the paper 82 on exact WKB long ago, is that there might be new lines emanating. When the two stop signs cross, there should be new lines emanating. And when this new line might cross another stop sign, then you have to have another new line, etc. So that makes things definitely more and more complicated. The graph becomes more complicated. However, and here comes the main point, which is that, if the graph is complicated, you have to do something to simplify. Well, the graph is complicated partly because it is a one-parameter family of a graph. I said that there is a theta correspond to the direction of the directional transform, and you have to plot some complicated figure for each value of theta. But now I can, the proposal is to simplify the question. So forget about solving the problem in general, but fine-tune the coefficient. So even if you, after imposing the condition, there are some parameters remaining on this phi. But let's fine-tune the coefficient such that all the Stokes segments appear for a single body of theta. So then what happens is that, all the non-trivial information which you want to regarding this quiver will be in a single graph. And then it's much easier to extract the quiver, and that's what we want. Yeah, okay, so let me try to start showing the flushing the pictures, because it's probably much easier to say, show rather than saying words. Right, so here it is. Let's see. Okay. So let's see. So this is an example. Okay, I should enlarge it. I made it smaller. And then, I should enlarge it. Okay, so this is the example of the VPS graph. The Stokes graph. In the example, let's see, I need to enlarge it. I forgot how to enlarge it. In fact, the picture will become larger. And so it's a complicated thing. Indeed, it's a little bit too small. So full screen doesn't help. Show data points. I forgot how to enlarge it. Maybe I can see that scroll this here, for example. It's a little bit too small, but let's see. So this is the graph, and everything is a little bit condensed. Maybe there is a way to enlarge it. I forgot. Zoom. Box zoom. I don't know why this is not. So I went to somewhere. So there's a program for plotting these graphs. Due to my collaborators, Chan-Yun Park and Maximo Gabera, there is also a mathematical file written by Andy Netzke. If you begin to do this, what happens is that, I'm varying the parameter theta, and this graph changes considerably. There are various lines, and the points, there are some small points here in this case. In this case, they represent the punctures. And there are many branch points here. In this example, there are 6 branch points. But now, if I have actually fine-tuned the parameters such that the graphs, all the Stokes segments which appeared here appears in this particular phase, the single phase. That's right. So I don't know how to make it larger. I forgot. This picture is an example of the BPS graph, if you try to plot it, for example, for generic parameters, everything is messy. In fact, you don't have to see it. In fact, the whole point is to just show that how complicated it is. The point is that it's hard to in this case there is no closed segment standing from one branch point to another. But in this case, the parameters are fine-tuned such that everything appears in the single parameter. And then you can easily read off, because the picture takes a symmetric form, and then there is a set of arcs, the Stokes segments here and there, and then you can compute the intersection pairing, and then extract the quiver associated with it. So that gives the quiver. And then the question is that whether you can connect it back to the WKB analysis. And to some extent, it's always, if you anticipate the connection of this cleaver to WKB analysis itself, then you already know what kind of parameters, so namely Borel's type symbols, you should associate with to each vertex of the cleaver, so namely for each stalk segment, and then how it transforms. There's already a canonical formula, and that will give you the proposed formula. But the question is to check the directory in the exact WKB analysis side. And for that, I need probably to know better what is known about exact WKB for SLN and so on. And perhaps I should finally flash a little bit, well, maybe just this picture. So, and so one of the things I said is that is people didn't know actually what happens when you have these non-maximal functions. Yes. And then that has a nice combinatorial rule that the function degenerates, but then the graph degenerates, etc. So many of the things you can just draw the graph, and then there's some combinatorial operations, and that is in this language how to deal with how to discuss more general punctures, and the change of slope graph you can also represent combinatorially. So there's definitely a combinatorial structure in this exact WKB analysis for nth order differential equation. And I'm happy to learn more about this stuff, and then hopefully there is, again, a connection to this cleavers. Let me finish here.
Okay, please.
Yes.
So what is the connection between what is the connection between the normal physics use of the term quiver, as in quiver gauge theory, and your anti-symmetric matrices?
Let's see. The quiver in this context, first of all, refers to the just the oriented graph. So it has a set of vertices, and then the arrows in between. So and the anti-symmetric matrix is the adjacent symmetric. So namely, the ij entry of the matrix is the number of arrows from I to j minus the number of arrows from j to I, for example. So if there is no closed loop, the anti-symmetric matrix contains the same information as the quiver itself. And but of course, quiver has appeared in various different contexts. For example, quiver can be used to define quiver gauge theory. And then there's some, so this type, exactly the same type of graph you can try to embed into string theory, et cetera. And I had a paper with Dan C and then Jonathan Heppmann and Cameron Buffer where we defined 4D n equal 1 theory, for example, and then discussed the thing, for example. And so that was a slightly different context from for the BPS states and for the n equal 2 series. But the number of supersymmetries, et cetera, is the same. So it's all for the n equal 1, you know, 4 supercharges. And it's just a matter of whether you want to count the particles, half BPS particles inside for the n equal 2, or want to construct a 4D n equal 1 theory, feeding every all the four-dimensional space-time, for example. So the picture and then the stokes, the lines, et cetera, does have meaning in several different contexts. In fact, I also have worked on another thing which is related, is that I formulate this in the context BPS states in 4D n equal 2 series, but exactly how this graph changes is also related with the 3D n equal 2 series, which relies on the boundaries of 4D n equal 2 series, in fact, which through the M5 brain is connected to this complex Chan-Simons theory in the three-manifold, so-called 3D-3D correspondence, etc. So I'm now working on some follow-up where we try to apply some of the quivers we found and then try to extract some interesting three-manifold invariants, for example. So the context, there are many contexts. Okay, sorry, maybe the answer is too long.
So what happens if the curves that you have, cubic curves, have like nodal singularities? What
nodal
does this
singularities? Oh, the cubic curve. I see.
Yeah.
So the nodal singularity is what y squared equals to
something that has a bifurcation. I mean, let's say z minus, you know, to the power 2.
Z to the power
z minus 1.
Oh, 1 over z.
Yeah.
Y squared 1 over z, for example. Oh, that's right. So that's like a singularity, right? So singularity of this polynomial, potential polynomial, and that actually is the point here, here, etc. So namely, there is a zero as in the and so these are the zeros, branch points, but there are poles of the potential. So that's what I was calling the singularity, for example. And near the singularity, suddenly interesting things happen. Sometimes there is a Stokes line, and it begins to oscillate, for example, and it might be absorbed into that oscillate line, for example. That's the local structure there. And in some cases, if you vary the parameter, there is sometimes a concentric circles appearing near that line. And that's associated with the vector multiplier for the n equal 2 gauge.
What
example.
I think was that when your rooms are degenerate, like okay. You have a cubic, say.
Ah, okay, I sorry.
I mean,
oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, actually, well, okay, good. Yeah, I mean, 1 minus y squared, x minus 1 squared times something. Yeah, well, let's see. I don't know the general structure. In fact, we can certainly play with around these examples, but. That's like a general question. What happens with the when the two poles collide? Indeed, and well, let's see. But the preliminary comment is that suppose that each pole has an order has a single order pole, for example. Then what happens is that if these two singularities collide, it becomes the pole of order two. And that type of thing has been studied in also in this gauge theory context, etc. And that's the situation where, in that language, a regular singularity collides to become irregular singularity. And the structure of analysis of with the irregular singularity has been done for some cases, but not in detail. And in fact, even in the polynomial case, like the nth order polynomial case, there is that irregular singularity at infinity. So there is a px dx, but if you go to infinity, there is a, if you have an n order polynomial, there is a n plus 1 order pole at infinity. So that's known as an irregular singularity, and that has been studied to some extent. Yes?
I think there was a question there.
So how much is known about, I guess, the WKB of the differential equation? So now you have n WKB solutions, and I guess when you're crossing Stokes lines, you have some matrix which mixes those n.
Right.
Do you know to what extent that's been studied?
Well, that's actually what I wish to know, in fact. I mean, for example, I'm sure that there is a local analysis. For example, one of the things, local analysis we should be able to do. So normally local analysis means that in the A1 case, there is just a branch point and three line emanating. And then basically what you can do is to approximate everything by ARE function and then try to, that's a concrete function, so you can try to see what happens by taking advantage of that explicitation. That's what you can do. And what I could imagine is that there is a similar thing you can do if you have an n-fold cover. Yeah, if you have an n-fold cover and then consider this maximal puncture, there is an n minus 1 divided by 2, many branch points. But still, as far as the local analysis is concerned, probably you can map it to some canonical differential equation and solve it with that and extract a connection formula, for example. So that's the local analysis. And once you have the local analysis, there is a question about this Borel, the transformation of the Borel symbols, etc., which is much more difficult. But I don't, simply put, I don't really know. So if there is something known and.
To me, this coincidence of two very different theories is intriguing. Is there some reason why the same type of formalism appears in those two very disjoint?
Oh, I see. Well, yeah, I don't really know the deep reason, but both are related with the quantization of a certain curve. So, namely, in this case, well, in both cases, you have the y squared plus px equal to zero. So that's a well-defined curve, and then the phase in the phase space, and they want to quantize it one way or another. And then to some extent, gauge theory does a way of the quantizing this, and then solving the Schrödinger equation is another. And so it's, well, maybe that might be the reason. Well, except that I should say that what's interesting, that the interesting generalization, which is not known even for the case of A1, is that there is something called a quantum cluster algebra. And that's like a putting the variable x to everything. So the Borel single becomes non-commutative variables, and there's a power q popping up here and there. And what happens is that if you have a branch point going around, you have to associate factor minus q to that instead of minus 1, et cetera. So there is this one parameter q, for example. And then there is a natural question of could there be a q of the WKV?
By the way, for the singular aspect, I think you should discuss with Koike.
Oh, okay, I see.
He worked a lot on that.
I see. Thank you.
Okay, I think we're just on time. It's 15:30. Tea is waiting for us. And we have a break, 30 minutes.
Thank you.